You're listening to Let's Get Metaphysical. This podcast explores the spiritual and metaphysical world through the experiences and opinions of the host and those interviewed. It should not necessarily be seen as direct endorsement or personal advice to our listeners. We encourage you to use your own discernment, judgment, and intuition regarding anything you learn of through this show.
Let's get metaphysical.
Welcome to the Let's Get Metaphysical podcast. I am your host, Renata Maniacci, here to remind you that you are a soul inhabiting a human body for a brief period of time here on lovely planet Earth, and don't you forget it. Happy New Year's, everybody. It is 2020, and I'm not sure why, but I am so excited for this year. There is something special about this year, 2020. And a sense of lightness. And speaking of light, in today's episode, we will be talking about spirituality via life lessons with Deepak Ramala. But first, today's show is sponsored by moldavitejewelry.com, the number one source for genuine moldavite, meteorite, and rare crystal jewelry. moldavitejewelry.com offers the largest selection of artisan-made Moldavite pendants, necklaces, earrings, and high-vibe energy jewelry on planet Earth. Spiritual seekers will find many unique pieces, Moldavite tektites, and Moldavite oil to aid on your path. Is the stone of transformation calling to you? As a special thank you, listeners of this podcast can use discount code LETSGETMETA25 at checkout, in all caps, and save 25% off your entire order at moldavitejewelry.com. Our guest today is Deepak Ramala. Deepak is a kindness ambassador and the founder and artistic director of Project Fuel. FUEL stands for Forward the Understanding of Every Life Lesson. The organization collects life lessons from people of all ages and backgrounds around the world. Deepak is an eternal optimist. He believes in enriching the human experience and helping people meet their highest potential. He loves to collect people's life lessons and share them by turning them into interactive performance activities and learnings. I met Deepak recently in Spain while attending the Holistic Vision Symposium. We were both placed in the same group, multidimensional learning, which I can absolutely see is so perfect for him given what he does in the world. Deepak is one of the most light-filled beings I have ever met, and for that reason, I just knew I wanted him to shine his light on this podcast. So without further ado, let's jump into our interview. Are you ready? Let's get meta.
Hello, Deepak. Thank you so much for joining us on Let's Get Metaphysical today. How are you?
Thank you, Renata, for having me. It's such a pleasure to be speaking to you, and I'm doing very, very well. Thank you.
Excellent. Yay. Well, Deepak, I start my interviews mostly the same way with everybody, and I will with you as well. Would you please like to share a spiritual or a metaphysical experience that you've had with us today?
Absolutely. So, I mean, for me, in many contexts, the metaphysical journey is always about having an internal path that kind of leads you to profound wisdom, spiritual or emotional connection. And my life, when I see in, you know, retrospect, I think has been a metaphysical journey when it comes to documenting life lessons. My mother was never able to finish her school. She was pulled out of school in grade 5. And one conversation with her about life and how did she know so much without having gone to school. If you get a chance to meet her, you'll know that she's one of the most humorous intellectual people that you'll ever come across. Yes, absolutely. And at age 14, I was very confused because I thought, if she hasn't gone to school, how does she know so much? And her answer was very simple yet profound. She said, life is my classroom. And from that experience, I have been able to derive lessons and shape my knowledge into raising you. I think in many ways, Renata, that was the beginning of the metaphysical journey of my work, because it led me to document life lessons of people from all around the world, which has been in correlation to everything spiritual, everything emotional, everything physical, intellectual, or personal for people. And the other, I think, would be to say that my grandmother, when we were growing up, I would go to visit her in summer holidays in the mountains. And she would talk about a woman in the village who literally died and went to the gates of heavens. And they prepared the body to be cremated the next morning. So all the rituals were done. Her body was placed in the village inside the lower deck of the house. And she woke up before they were going to take her to cremate. And
no way.
My grandmother says it's not a fictional story. She was part of it and part of the experience. And so she talks about that when the woman did wake up and sort of undie, which sounds like a funny term, but in the context of that scenario and circumstance, and if you are willing to believe it, then you start to understand and unfold what the woman says and does. And as she said, as soon as she got up, she called in this one particular family from the village and whose husband had died 2 years ago. And she said, "I met him on the gates to heaven and he wasn't allowed to come in because he had been mixing water in milk and selling for years." So not being truthful to people for such a basic necessity was holding him in from going inside the gates of heaven or gates of the universe or whatever, or having a true, transition into the next level transcendence. And so she said to his family, to his wife in particular, that you have to be able to sell pure milk and offer pure milk to people because that's what your husband asked me to convey. And that's that particular incident, that story of that woman undying, being able to see the gates of heaven, coming back with deeds, very, very practical inputs for the village and people of the village, is for me one of the most significant metaphysical incidents that I remember of, wow, you can actually correlate what we call here in India karma or deeds to having a good afterlife spiritual experience as well.
Absolutely. That's a wonderful story. Thank you for sharing. Karma is something that I don't know that we've touched on in great depth on the podcast, but it's certainly a belief system that I hold, and it's a reality for me. And that is very much in the fabric of life in for most people in India. And it is something that makes a lot of sense to me, and I feel like I encounter that in real time in my life as well. So Deepak, I want to ask you more about your life lessons, your wisdom, your wisdom lessons that you go around and you ask people for. Can you tell us more about how that works for you?
Sure. So I, as mentioned, that my mother was the inspiration. My mother had no opportunity to go to school, but she kind of inspired me in many ways to think that she is learning simply by living. And what that meant to me was that everybody who is living is learning something. But where can you find that knowledge? Where can you find that wisdom? Certainly not on Google. You cannot just type in a random person's name and say, "Oh, Renata's life lesson." It won't pop up. And I was very dissatisfied from the very beginning of my, career, I would say, that only 2% of what Quentin Crisp, the British author and raconteur, says, the 2% of the golden society gets a chance to be remembered by generations and to create an impact beyond their immediate family or immediate geographical circle. And I thought, well, my mother knows such phenomenal things about relationships and how to raise a family. Can a girl in Afghanistan studying under the Taliban, secretly going to school and fearing one day to be pulled out of that school because of the complications of politics, can benefit from that? Or can, you know, a grandmother in the south of France teach how to be one with nature? Or elders from the Amazon can talk about preserving ecosystem and respecting rituals and ceremonies to young children in New Delhi, India? And that quest led me to start asking people what life had taught them. And I was 14 when I started asking that question. At age 17, I started designing those learnings into mini experiences for people and passing on that knowledge. And now I am 28. So for the last good 11 years now, that's what I have done. Documented, designed, and passed on human wisdom in as simple and as meaningful ways as possible. There are four main tools through which we do it. One is education. We've designed our own methodology in forms of curriculums, modules that we teach. Countries like Belgium, the city of Antwerp, the Education Board has adopted these methodologies. I've worked with the United Nations, UNESCO with it.
Wow.
Through art, we've painted world's first village of life lessons where you can actually walk from any house to any house and you will see the wisdom of the people living in them reflected on their outer walls. There are films we've made on interesting places around the world, you know, that showcase community wisdom. And then there are events that we hold, including world's first human wisdom festival here in the mountains of Dehradun. So yeah, that's a long shot and short long of my work.
That's beautiful. I'm wondering, would you be able to share perhaps one or two of the lessons that people have shared with you, and then kind of share how you have turned those into, like, do you share them by telling those stories, or you said you turn them, some of them, into activities so that people can get the lesson in a more kind of tangible way than just auditory?
Yes. So generally, depending on the nature of the life lesson, because some life lessons are a complete story by themselves. So, you know, there's not a need to turn them into an activity per se, but they can be written into beautiful blogs and they can be turned into films. For example, one of the things that comes to mind is very recently, actually, a girl from South Africa, Nicole Bannister, shared her life lesson with us, which is that we are more alike than unlike. And, you know, kind of sometimes we forget to see that in people. One of our Fuel fellows designed it into an activity, very interestingly, where he asks everyone to design or draw an apple, and everybody draws an apple on a sheet of paper. And then you take a good hard look on your apple, and then you exchange that drawing with somebody else in the room. Now, based on what you drew and what you have in your hand, someone else's apple, you draw three comparisons, and you get about 4 minutes to do that. At the end of the activity, Renata, very interestingly, most adults write differences, which means that they recall what their apple was and how different the current apple of somebody else is. So they will write things like, my apple is bigger, that apple was shinier, or that apple was half eaten, it had a leaf, and they just keep pulling out differences. Whereas the same activity, when done with young children, say age 12 and below, they will always write similarities. And I've had incidents in the room when the people, especially adults, would never agree that I said the word comparison, or the facilitator said the word comparison. They're like, no, you told us to write differences.
And wow.
Luckily, when it's recorded, we can always play back the tape and say, no, you heard it differences, because somewhere in the evolution or the behavioral change process, we have started to equate comparison equals to differences, which means you have to put one thing down to lift something else up, or you have to say bad about one thing to make something else feel good. And that seems very contrived and conflicted to me, because that's not what the original definition of comparison is. So that's one of the ways we design these activities, in very simple, thought-provoking exercises, and put them into wholesome modules. Yeah.
That is amazing. It seems so simple, but I really don't understand how people would come up with that activity. You know, do you come up with these activities? Do you have a team who comes up with these?
So, I mean, yes, I began it at 17 designing them, but now there are, you know, people from different walks of life. Actually, we host a fellowship that brings in together architects, sports scientists, researcher, documentarians, corporate heads, and they look at these activities and bring their expertise. And then I have a team at Project Fuel as well.
That's beautiful. When we met, Deepak,
yeah,
I believe I asked you what one of your, I mean, and you've heard, you know, probably thousands or hundreds of thousands of lessons by now after 11 years of doing this. But I believe I asked you what one of your favorite ones was. And you were telling me about a place in India, Varanasi, where people in India go literally to die. Do you want to tell me about that? Tell our listeners about that?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So believed in the Hindu mythology is this notion that if you take your last breath in the city of Varanasi or Banaras, where the holy river Ganges flows, you attain what is popularly known as salvation or moksha. And so many people over the last couple of centuries have been going there in their last days to take, you know, their last breath there and attain moksha. Now, the interesting fact was that somewhere in the last 100, 150 years, 8 salvation homes were built for people to come and stay. One of those salvation homes is known as Mukti Bhavan, which is translates to Salvation House. And the interesting part about this particular one is it only allows for you 2 weeks to stay in. So you have to be very, very sure you're going to die in 2 weeks. If you don't die in 2 weeks, you have to check out. I mean, can you imagine? Not only to make peace with death, but put a timer on it.
Yes.
And when I first heard that, I was so curious. As a guy who collects life lessons, I was like, wow, what do people know at the very end of their life is already an interesting plot. But what do they know precisely when they know that they have 2 weeks left? So I went and, you know, stayed in Varanasi and interviewed these people. And the manager of this place has been the manager at that role for 44 years. So he's seen more than 12,000 people take their last breath in his arms and, you know, pass away and transition into another life for those who believe, or, you know, go back to nature for those who believe otherwise. And so from these 12,000 deaths, he told me 12 life lessons of people. Now, for someone who's seen both life and death 12,000 times at close quarters, is an interesting data point, you know, as a source. And so he shared with me that all 12,000 people on their deathbed had someone they had to say sorry to or to accept sorry from. And for me, that was such a revelatory statement, because I thought, wow, everybody has someone to apologize to that we've been delaying. And everyone has the power to actually forgive someone that too we've been delaying till our last breaths. The manager actually said to me that one of his biggest lessons from the 12,000 deaths was resolve all conflicts before you go. And I told him, I said, that sounds so difficult to do, because if you just fought with someone, you can't just be like, okay, let me resolve this tomorrow morning. And he actually chuckled the same way. And he said, no, resolving on conflict does not always mean to say sorry or to say, oh, now we are friends. You come to my house, I come to your house, we're going to meet for lunch. It sometimes means to shut off the file, to close the chapter, to embrace that the conflict is the closure, and to move on, to not linger onto it. And also resolving on conflicts before you go does not mean you only resolve them at your deathbed. But if you fought with someone today, the least you can do is, if you don't want to call them up and apologize and seem like the smaller person, is draft a text that says, you know what, I don't think so that should have been said like that, but I'm going to take my time to heal from this, and keep it saved in your draft folder. Because what that would do is it will allow you to move towards that direction rather than a revengeful state of being. What a simple but beautiful life lesson, right? Resolve all conflicts before you go.
Absolutely. And hopefully you can do it much sooner than before you actually leave the body, but it is, that's a beautiful lesson.
Yes, absolutely. So he said, actually, the goal is that you should not go to bed with any sort of conflict and frustration. Right before sleeping, ask yourself, is there anything that's stealing away my sense of peace today? And if the answer is yes, do something to help you inch closer towards its resolution or its resolvement.
I think that's beautiful. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Is that something that you do before bedtime?
I mean, yes, try to. Though I try to avoid as many conflicts during the day itself. Because I try to fall asleep so soon. And, you know, so, I mean, I just pass out on most days from things. So I try to evaluate it as soon as I'm facing that with somebody. I would try to call them and, you know. Or
I can't imagine you facing conflict with anybody, but
thank you.
I think it's probably very, very rare. So Deepak, your work, you're collecting these life lessons, this wisdom from folks. How have you seen this be helpful to people, and who have you seen it be helpful for, in what ways?
I think, Renata, more than a couple of million people have seen, read our works. Over 2-3 million people across the planet. And
that's really impressive.
Thank you. And what that does for me is it reminds me that no small thing, no little statement is powerless in influencing someone. If you ever actually reflect back, what changed your life? It must be an advice from someone. It must be a little word of encouragement you said to yourself within your heart. That's always the turning point. It's never like the skies and the clouds parted and the sun, was shining brighter. It's never that right. Dramatic. It's just somebody saying, please let it go. And you're like, maybe I should now. or someone saying, you know what? If money is the problem, is the solution to a problem, it's the easiest solution. And suddenly your entire relationship with how you see money changes. Someone says, oh, come on, be proud of yourself. You're so beautiful. And you start to believe it. So I believe humanity and civilization for the longest time has survived and thrived on these little nuggets of wisdom, on these, you know, statements of encouragement. And with reference to your question on how it has impacted, well, I have taught life lessons of sex workers to business school students on branding and negotiations. So there you go. Wow. Academically, they are able to benefit directly from people who are on ground making those deal terms and agreements on an hourly basis. I have taught life.
Can you tell us more about that particular one?
Oh, yeah, sure. Absolutely. So I was working in Sonaghachi and Kamathipura, two of the biggest red light districts in Asia that are in India. And these women who are sex workers, you know, have had a very rough life because some of them were trafficked at a very young age, had to deal with pimps and other, challenges, police and government and system and society, and then the whole nature of work and labeling. And one of those women actually said to me, interpretation is a dangerous weapon. Use it wisely. And I said, what do you mean by that? She said, if you see me and interpret me from your little box, you will always see me as this poor, impoverished, pitiful sex worker. But when you come and spend time and evaluate my reality from my perspective, you will see me as an empowered, independent woman. Because I don't sleep with anyone. I have my own rules. I have actually invested in some of the carts outside this red light area. So the men who come to sleep with me have to buy things from those carts. I never use them. I send them back. So I actually keep the economy growing and the consumption less. Now, the moment you hear that, you notice that she's an entrepreneur. She's not just a random sex worker. But for us to be able to do that, we have to stop our interpretation of her and use it wisely to understand what more she is other than the defined societal construct. So when you teach that to business school students, that's the first rule, right? Branding. How do you interpret your customer? How do you interpret your target audience? If you're going to interpret them as you are a person with your spending capacity, you'll never be able to evaluate and make the right decisions on branding and labeling and communication. So there you go. You have the first lesson from a sex worker on interpretation of marketing and negotiation and perception building.
So, that's awesome. That's really insightful. I can see how these lessons that you pick up around the world, you can pick something up, like you said before, in one area of the globe, and it can completely reach somebody in a deep space in a different area, even if their cultures aren't anywhere near each other.
Absolutely. And even like for the life lesson I shared earlier from Varanasi, resolve all conflicts, you would not believe the amount of times that video has been posted and reposted and downloaded and shared and copied and, you know, plastered across walls. I still received it this morning from a random group, and somebody said, oh, this boy looks like you. And I almost laughed because, you know, it has had such a full circle of helping people. I have received more than 50 messages, notes from people who did not commit suicide because of that one lesson.
Wow.
Because it provided them encouragement to resolve their conflict. In fact, I met a woman on a journey once. I was flying from Mumbai to Chandigarh, another city. And she came up to me and she said, are you the guy who did that Banaras video? And I said, yes. And she started crying. And she said, I have to tell you, this is the most beautiful moment of my life because I saw your video. I had been separated from my husband for 4 years. I picked up the phone on him and I said, you know, I just saw a random kid on the internet tell that a place in Banaras encourages you to resolve your conflicts before you die. And I don't want you to be my conflict on my deathbed. So I'm just calling to say, if you want to resolve things, call me back. The husband calls back an hour later and says, wow, I miss you terribly. I'm so sorry we were caught up in our egos. I am now in a new city called Bhopal. I would love for you to visit. We can sit down, have a conversation. We don't have to be together, but we can be amicable about this. And that flight that she was taking that day was to Bhopal to meet her husband. So what are the chances that she saw my video? She decided to call her husband. She decided to buy that flight ticket and meet to inform me that she was going to take that next step. I think that's metaphysical.
That is metaphysical. I was just going to say, there's nothing more spiritual or divine than that. And I feel like you have those moments quite often, you know?
Yes.
What does spirituality mean to you, Deepak?
Well, spirituality for me means to hold the power or the space for unexpected love. That's what it is, in simple words. I'll rephrase it to say, to have the power to hold space for unexpected love.
That's beautiful.
Yes. To hold,
power. I need to sit, I want to meditate with that one after the interview.
Because that's what I think we actually face so much trouble with. We are never able to grasp unexpected love from unexpected quarters. And when we do, it overwhelms, it enthralls, it excites, it disappoints. We have those out-of-body experiences, which kind of indicates we need to hold space and first have the power to hold space for unexpected love. And when we do that, that is spirituality. Most people, when they go to temples, mosques, churches, you know, a synagogue, all of these places of religious existence, what are they experiencing? They're experiencing unexpected love of divine energy. You fall in love, you have a crush on somebody, they reply to your text message and say, okay, let's go on a date. What is that? Unexpected love. That is joy beyond control, right? That is desire in superiority of a lived and powerful manifestation of whatever they call law of attraction. And each one of those things clubbed together is spirituality in practice, not just theory. That is spirituality in practice for me.
That's really, really well put. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's so funny. Like I know that this is a little bit, you know, it's a little bit different of an interview for me and what our listeners are used to. But I'm so curious. Like, what do you want to see in the world? Where would you like to see what you're doing go on a big scale? What is it that you hope for humans?
Wow. What do I hope with my work? I think, Renata, to kind of create a cultural shift where you don't need an organization like mine to assist, serve, facilitate, and remind people that we can learn something from everybody. So essentially what I'm saying is I want my company to shut down in years to come and also become irrelevant, because that would be the real success of it. When you see people by themselves in act of habit and act of nature, turn to a co-passenger, turn to a stranger, turn to a family member over dinner and say, well, what has life taught you so far? And how can I grow from that? So I think that's the first. And the other big goal that I have for 2020 is to collect 1 million life lessons. So I'm actually going to request all your listeners that if you are encouraged by the work, do send across your life lesson to us. We are documenting 1 million life lessons and hopefully creating a unique repository of learnings for everybody in the world to benefit from.
That is amazing. How do people, is there a certain format? Do you prefer writing? Do you prefer audio, video? How do you collect life lessons?
So all of those, if they go to projectfuel.in, which is the website, www.projectfuel.in, on the very homepage, they will find a form that they can fill. It's a small form. It'll take about 5 minutes to fill, but depends on their life lesson and how much time they need to reflect for it. They can just fill that form and it'll reach us, and then we will write back to them and connect with them if we need more information. So it's really a 5-minute process, but imagine the amount of generations it will influence in times to come.
I love that. I think I will have to think of a life lesson to go and share so I can help you reach your goal.
Thank you.
Absolutely. How will you share these life lessons? And what do you have an idea? I know you're already doing it in many different ways, but what are you going to do with one? What if you did get 1 million life lessons? How are you going to organize and distribute that?
Okay, that's a wonderful question. And let me actually share that with you. What we are planning to do with that is create a World Wisdom Bank. So imagine, Renata, if like the World Bank, there was a World Wisdom Bank and you could borrow knowledge as a currency. If you were a teacher in Barcelona trying to teach empathy, and you could take modules designed on life lessons on empathy from anywhere around the world. If you were an artist trying to raise awareness about LGBT rights, and you could borrow learnings and stories of people to be able to craft that, how would that sound?
I think that you are way ahead of your time, Deepak. I think you're a complete visionary, and I think it's beautiful. I can absolutely see where you're going with that, and I think that's incredible. Do you already have like a format of how to do that? Like, it's all digital based, I suppose.
Yes, it's going to be digital based, and we're moving every day towards that goal. And for the last 11 years, my work actually seems like the precursor or the research to be able to build this new vision. You know, through education, through art, through media. So we've tried all possible tools and variants and communities to work with, and have arrived at the conclusion that this is doable as humanity, as civilization, and beneficial for not just the 7 billion that breathes today, but many more 7 billions that are going to be on Earth beyond these 100 years.
I think it's extremely forward-thinking and a beautiful thing to reach for humanity.
Thank you.
Is there anything else coming to mind that you'd like to share with us today?
Well, I would, you know, there's a metaphysical poet that I absolutely love. His name is John Donne. And John Donne was often quoted because of his style of writing as a metaphysical poet. And there is a particular line in one of his writings that says, "For whom does the bell toll?" And this is back in the day when somebody would die in the town, the church bell would toll, and the women and the men working around the town would turn and pop their heads out of the window or in the fields and say, who's that for? Who's that bell tolling for? And John Donne said, don't ask for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee, which means the death of every human being diminishes you. It is an alarm clock for you to start moving in the direction of you what you want. And someone's dying every minute in the world, which means this alarm clock is buzzing like a fire alarm in your face, in my face, in everybody's face to say, what is that you really want? Because someone just had to sacrifice their entire life to remind you that in this instance. And are you going to take the hint? So that's, I think, my larger message for everybody in the world. Don't ask for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. And hopefully that inspires you to move in the direction of more adventurous, ambitious, or simpler pursuits, but things that really, really call to the core of your heart and serve your desire to be more meaningful.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that, Deepak. How do listeners, if they want to, you already gave your organization's website address, I believe, but is there any other way that is acceptable that people could find out more about you or follow you that you'd like to share?
Yes, absolutely. So the website, as I shared, which I'm happy to restate, is www.projectfuel.in, where anybody can find all information about our work, all different kinds of projects. The second is social media. We are very active on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram, and it's by the same name, Project Fuel. And people can constantly be in touch, participate in some of the most ongoing campaigns and projects that we keep doing on a rolling basis. So those are some of the most active ways people can be part of our community.
That's perfect. Deepak, thank you so much for joining in this interview today. I'm honestly without words. I'm so glad that I got to hear more in depth about what I heard about a little bit when we met in Barcelona. So thank you so much for sharing that with my listeners, with our listeners on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Renata. I mean, I must say, the very first time you mentioned about, you know, let's get metaphysical, I was actually saying, I hope you get to ask me and invite me home. So I'm glad I can actually now say that very, very proudly, I got metaphysical with Renata.
Did get metaphysical.
And it was absolutely beautiful, as warm as the sun in winters. So thank you for that.
Oh. Thank you. I'm so glad that we were on the same wavelength with that. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Deepak.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to Deepak Ramala for joining me today. He is truly a light-filled ball of bliss in human form, and it is such a delight to have had him on the show. Please do check out projectfuel.in and share your life lesson with that organization to help them reach their goal of 1 million life lessons in 2020. On that note, today's bonus content is kind of a twofer. Patrons of the podcast will see an adorable video of Deepak and I singing this amazing song that he taught us at the symposium where we met in Spain. I honestly can't get it out of my head, and it actively makes my life better every time that I sing it. The second part of the bonus content will be me sharing what my life lesson is and why that is the lesson that I shared with Project Fuel. If you are interested in having access to that, please consider becoming a patron of the podcast at patreon.com/letsgetmeta. As a reminder, we will be announcing the winner of our last Moldavite oil gift on our next episode. I may have said we were going to announce it today, but we're going to announce it on the January 15th episode. It will go to one of our new patrons of the podcast. This offer was open to anyone who became a patron between November 15th, 2019 and December 31st, 2019. Every once in a while, we do have awesome giveaways for our patrons, so stay tuned if that is interesting to you. I'm going to leave it there for today. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and I hope that the year 2020 is the very best year that you have had yet in this lifetime. Thank you for listening. Stay meta.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you like what we're doing, please consider becoming a patron of the podcast at patreon.com/letsgetmeta. Our intention is to raise the vibration of the planet by sharing, validating, and normalizing spiritual and metaphysical experiences. If you haven't pledged yet, we'd really appreciate your support. It helps keep this show going. Let's Get Metaphysical is a production of the Hana Healing Arts Network. The show's host is Renata Maniacci. The music for this podcast was composed by Rob Trefort of GoldenTurtleSound.org. Thank you for listening. Stay meta.
Metaphysical. Let's get meta. Metaphysical. Let's get meta. Metaphysical.